The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Dis donc, tu aurais besoin d'un bain?
De fric surtout. Tu veux pas m'acheter des fromages? C'est du chèvre, je travaille là.
Je croyais vraiment pas, je pourrais m'en manger ici. Et toi, tu les manges pas?
Oh, moi j'en ai mangé pour 10 ans, je me lasse vite.
Bon. Tiens. Ne reste pas là, tu les fais fuir. Excuse-moi de te dire ça, tu comprends ce travail.
Hey everyone, it's not just another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you.
Hey.
It's finally here, the Vagabond podcast that you've all been waiting for, that I hinted at on like the last 5 podcasts. Any few listeners that we have left, you're like, when are they going to release Vagabond?
It's here.
1985's Vagabond, directed by Agnes Varda, is here.
We gave the people what they wanted.
You just have to wait just a little bit longer, because we're going to do a little segment we like to call Heralds and Denouncements. Patrick, is there anything you would like to talk about?
Sure. I guess I'll go ahead and denounce a movie that I don't think is going to end up on my end of the year list, but was bad enough for me to put out in the universe that I did not enjoy The Darkest Minds, which is a movie that I don't know that I thought I was going to enjoy that much, but I watched it anyway, and it's not good. It's cheap, and the story is really thin, and it's really obviously a, you know, sort of Hunger Games-ish ripoff, kind of mixed with maybe a little bit of Twilight in there. Who knows? It's hitting all the YA buttons, though. It's really in that, like, oh, it's a post-apocalyptic world, but all the kids have superpowers, but everyone has a different superpower that's...
okay.
that, like, distinguishes them from the other people with superpowers. Some people have evil superpowers. Some people use their powers for good.
I started watching it, and even though it had Mandy Moore, Amanda Sternberg, and Bradley Whitford in it, who I all like, I still abandoned it after like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, no, thanks.
Yeah, it's extremely
damning.
Dull.
With that power trio.
I know.
Hidden all the types.
Yeah, I don't know what I thought.
You got your Bradley Whitford fans. You got your Mandy Moore fans. You got your Amanda Sternberg fans.
I'd love to see that Venn diagram.
it's an interesting mix of characters.
Yeah, right in the middle.
Honestly, I was a little bit. I was like, maybe there's something here. Maybe, even though the trailer didn't look good, I was like, I've been surprised before. I don't know if I've been that surprised before, but maybe. And then I was just like, nah. Like there really just wasn't anything to latch onto in this movie. I was just like. So bored the whole time. I was like, I know exactly where this is going. Every story beat is telegraphed pretty far in advance. The twists don't really land at all. And the performances aren't good either. There's not even anything to latch onto on like the script level or the performance level. Nobody's doing anything weird. Nobody's doing anything goofy. Everybody's just kind of playing it dull. Do what?
How dark were those mines, though?
The mines aren't really that dark, honestly. Like,
not even the darkest.
They can control people's thoughts. I think is like the
dark.
It's kind of dark. There's other mines that shoot fireballs. So I don't know. Like,
pretty bright.
It's like. Who's to say which mines are the darkest? Those are the bright minds, yeah.
They should have called Adam McKay's Vice the darkest minds.
Oh, Lord.
It's going to be on my top 10 for sure.
Yeah, probably. It's my turn. I'm going to, there's so much. I've been busy watching movies as of late. There's much I could do. I'll keep it positive here. I'll keep some positive energy, and I'll herald American Honey, a movie that back when it came out, I gave the Cowards 3-star rating to. I was hedging my bets. I said, oh, no, I like this movie.
I think 2.5 stars is the Cowards rating.
That's true. 3 bumped it up just a little bit, but I was like, I like this movie so much, but I'm afraid that might be a little pandering, and Andrea Arnold's British perspective might give it kind of an ethnographic edge that makes me uncomfortable. The latter part, still a little true. Not entirely gone. I was a little right about that. But it was just so far ahead of the curve. Nobody else has made a movie like tackling these subcultures like that yet. And she did it like several years before it was the norm in our country now. It is truly like little peep cinema. The meeting of trap music and like mall emo music and like pop country garbage with class discourse and gender discourse going on through. And I think like the parts I didn't even necessarily like initially, especially the ending, kind of towards the end, you get to this point where she ends up performing some sex work for these oil field workers, and it's all very hellish and operatic. Like, she's giving a guy a hand job in front of these like giant flames, and it's like, this is a long movie, we could have wrapped it up here, this is too much. But now I'm looking at that and I'm like, I don't know, that's on point. These like sad gross men who have more money than they'll ever know what to do with, because they spend their whole lives out in oil fields, and they just like, you know, take advantage of sex workers, and it's just kind of the end of the line for America. And there's so much more. And Shia LaBeouf gives one of the greatest performances in recent memories, as does Riley Keough. It's incredible. Soundtrack still slaps. There's a whole scene that just, like, goes through an entire Migos song. Doesn't cut it. It's like a 5-minute song, and they keep playing it. And they don't stop. And there's, like, dudes making out to it, and Migos being, like, infamously homophobic. I thought that was fun, too. I was like, yeah, all right, that's cool, too. American Honey's incredible. I love American Honey. At one point, also cheated while watching it and actually turned it into a 185 movie, as it's in, like, I don't think it might not be in, like, full-on 135. It might be in, like, 166, but blew up the image with the power of an HD television. It kind of looked better that way. That might be the one hitch. Might have improved Andre Arnold's movie for her a little bit, but
that's cool.
We upgraded your movie.
It's a... rare where someone, the same person, is kind of like heralding the same movie twice, because he also gave it best soundtrack of the year on the end of the year podcast.
Nothing changed with that. Yes, that soundtrack remains the best of that year in many years to come, I imagine.
Yeah,
everything else got better too.
That year also produced my favorite soundtrack of the 2010s, which is Nerve.
An incredible soundtrack indeed, yes.
Oh yeah.
Beautiful Nerve. Yeah. And another forward-thinking, prescient movie. Oh, that was a good year. Not a bad year in retrospect.
I'm in the same boat as you. We've done a lot of mini-casts recently, which means I haven't gotten to herald or denounce anything. If I did rewatches, like I rewatched a bunch of Harry Potter films and they're all bad. I rewatched Ratatouille and Raising Arizona and they're still really good.
Sure.
But I've also finally, you know, now 2018 is wrapping up, so you know what that means. It's time for you to make the best of 2017 video. So I've been watching everyone's best of 2017 videos. Instead of being cruel and denouncing a movie that one of y'all liked, I'll hit my favorite so far, which is the Netflix documentary Strong Island.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, I think Ilya already covered a lot of its strong points and its weak points, but I guess I'll just say that for an autobiographical documentary, the director is very willing to interrogate himself in a way that is like almost hard to watch at times, because you're like, this situation where your brother was killed is like 99.999999999% not your fault, and yet you're going to devote a significant chunk of the movie to talking about what you could have done to prevent it. and the way that you gave in to like toxic masculinity and the things that you hid about yourself and stuff like that. And I'm like, man, there's so, I watched it like, you know, the same week that I watched Get Me Roger Stone, and it was kind of like a weird boomerang because everyone in that movie has no self-awareness to like interrogate their own enormous guilt and a lot of horrible things that have happened, like really big horrible things. And so it was like, yeah, it was kind of a weird boomerang effect, I guess.
Yeah, no, but it's a pretty fun pairing. It's a good double feature.
Two Netflix stops. I also watched LA 92, and that was good as well. Another movie with where people are also aren't interrogating themselves, but how could they? They're just people on the news for the most part, because it's not there's no talking heads in that. It's just all archival footage put together to make a movie.
It's the best type of documentary, generally speaking.
But yeah, if I had seen it in time, Strong Island would have been in my top 10 last year.
Makes sense. I still need to watch it in the sharing.
For those like real serious loose cannons heads out there, Strong Island and Happy Death Day are in. Detroit and Beach Rats are out.
Whoa! Hey, I like the sound of this.
Somebody update the wiki.
All those Reddit fans are rushing to.
Here's our subreddit.
All right. Technically, Vagabond was Basil's pick, but after missing a bunch of podcasts and us delaying it for a long time, he still wasn't able to make it this week and just told us to move forward with it. Mitchell has graciously agreed to do Basil's job.
I'm the Basil now.
Hey, I'm the Basil now.
Classic. Great quote. Can't wait for AFI to update their quotes with that one. Yeah, we watched Vagabond this week, which apparently there was a lot of hype for leading up to this. I didn't know it was so delayed. I'm honored. It's a very straightforward movie on paper. We follow Sandrine Bonheur as she wanders around a young homeless woman, and the people she encounters, they reflect back on these their interactions with her via these kind of faux talking head documentaries that we never actually see a reporter. There isn't really a framing device for it, but they speak at the camera and reflect back on how she impacted them and what they got from her. And yeah, it's there really isn't too much more to it than that in terms of literal plot.
She dies. Going,
well, yes, she dies at the very beginning. It's one of those. We know where it's heading. And she's, and I guess it is sent within the French, like, wine country as well. Wine is very important to the narrative. A lot of wine. So, yes.
Now, let's listen to us whine about this.
What's a bit of cheese with that?
I like this movie. I wish that I liked it more because I think that its thesis and premise, I guess, is very good, but I appreciated it more intellectually than I did, like, actually just super enjoy watching it. And as I see it, is like, it's a little bit of, like, I guess, a soft criticism at the difference between how these types of films generally are received versus how people actually act towards the lower class in the real world. Like, a lot of this movie is like the people like talking, you know, the characters interacting with this homeless woman, like treating her badly and talking badly about her, and then us feeling sad about it, and then like these very big like orchestral strings like coming in to tell us like how tragic the situation is, while also being like, this is how we would act in that situation, pretty much. Like, you wouldn't, having watched this movie wouldn't help you escape from that cycle. So I think that's very smart, but for whatever reason, it wasn't like hitting me.
Yeah, I also liked this movie, and I will say that I enjoyed the scope of the critique of society, I guess, because it doesn't just say like, oh, these like rich people are bad. It's like, yeah, everyone top to bottom, like, puts on her these sort of demands that, I don't know, that I guess they are coming to with like their own baggage of being like, oh, well, poor people are this way, so I get to treat them this way. And everyone, you know, no matter how much money they have, they're like, well, at least I'm not as bad as this poor person, basically, throughout the whole movie. And I was like, golly, like, that's a pretty, it's a pretty, like, large swath of people, too. Like, from, you know, people who are, like, a university professor to the guy giving blood at a, you know, like, blood bank or whatever. Like, all the way up and down. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty impressive that they weren't just like, oh, well, here's the bad guy and here's the like tragic ending. They're like, everybody's bad, and her tragic ending is just a, you know, sort of a symptom of the society that we have set up under capitalism, where we just decide that it's okay for certain people to die.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the same boat as all of us here, where very much appreciate the intent in certain aspects of it, but yeah, it's not even a particularly long movie, but certainly by the end of the movie, I was like, all right, yep, let's wrap it up, not to be too callous, but I feel like a lot of the anecdotes and sequences kind of...
I know this death is coming.
Yeah, guys. Yeah, that's also part of the problem, too. I just never really liked that framing device in any context, so knowing that, just kind of like, all right, let's get there. And a lot of the sequences, while I do agree, I think there is some import to showing like the variety of responses, or like the academic's response, the, you know, the kind of more working class farmer response. Yeah, at the same time, they end up feeling like a touch redundant. They kind of hit very similar notes over and over again. I think the movie gets a little more interesting when you like really start thinking about it in like broader terms of like how one can be free in society at large and kind of abstract it. That was when I was like, oh, that's cool. And then, yeah, not necessarily fair to compare it to movies that would come along, because I imagine this is a very influential movie for many that came out in the past decade. But like thinking of, you know, recent ones like Heaven Knows What, or even this year's Leave No Trace, probably influenced by, and I think have kind of picked up with what Varda was doing and ran with it. Yes. So yeah, not entirely a fair comparison, but I respect what she's up to here. Just didn't always hit as hard. I do like how it really tries to challenge your empathy, though. There's no attempt to make her a very nice character. And why would you be if you were homeless and wandering around France and just having a fucking miserable time? And I do like that Varda, you know, makes you care about her while also just being like, yeah, she kind of sucks. She would be very challenging to deal with. She is a prickly character, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Yeah, and I do like that they even broach that. They're like, here's these people who actually like want to give her some land and like a place to live.
Farmers.
And she's like, I don't want to work.
Yeah.
I just want to sit around and eat bread and cheese all day.
Same.
I mean, honestly, who doesn't?
You know what? Yeah, I respect her take a lot. If the outdoors weren't as dirty as they are, maybe I too would. But I need a shower. It's tough.
He has a nice quote that I haven't completely unpacked yet, that farmer guy, where he says something along the lines of, by being useless, she, you know, confirms the society that she attempts to reject.
Ah, yes, I know.
The philosopher, like, farmer, yeah.
Like, yes. She proves that by acting useless, she proves that the way that society treats her is how she should be treated. And I'm like, that's, I don't think he's correct.
No.
But I think that's, like, the way that a lot of people sort of rationalize, self-justify the behavior. Towards,
and also why
people with the least money
becomes an impossibility to escape society, or for you know, an individual or small collective to ever challenge society in a meaningful way because of that. Sad. It's also what Leave No Trace is about.
I also think that, like, even at the lowest rung of society, I guess, like where she's just hanging out with the poorest people who are, you know, just basically like scamming people for, you know, 2 francs for a picture that they took. Like they're still like trying to commodify her in a way, because that guy's whole deal is like, I want to take you to, you know, like this city and we could just make pornos with you because you're a commodity that I can use to make, you know, whatever pittance that I'm getting for, you know, my bohemian lifestyle, I guess he would say, probably. Yeah. But I found that kind of fascinating that they, like, it wasn't just, you know, it's the most like openly capitalistic view at the lowest rung. It's like, I'm still so indoctrinated with capitalist system that, like, I believe that it's okay for me to commodify anything around me.
Yeah. Slightly related to that, I think the point that hits hardest is how, like, every man in this movie sees her as a tasty dish. Like, one of the more upsetting parts for me in the movie is when, I guess, like, the premise of the movie is that they find her body and then they go around interviewing these people.
Yeah.
Like, they're following, like, a... And so they're interviewing this one guy, and he was like, yeah, we were hired to take down these shelters, and then I saw that someone was in there, and then, like, cuts to, like, the flashback, and he's like, look at this hot lady down here.
Yeah.
It's like, are you thinking about any of the things that you're doing right now? And it's like, yeah. Oh, she's sleeping on the street. I'm destroying shelters for some reason.
Yep, who knows?
Who cares? And, got a boner. That's the important part of this equation.
What do I have here? Dead person? Yeah. Or the scene towards the end where that grad student guy or whatever was sent out to explicitly find her and then does and is like, ew, she's too gross now. I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Like, she smells bad and she's crazy. She was just very drunk. She seemed fine otherwise. That's like, I feel like that scene exemplifies both what I really like about the movie and what I don't at the same time, because there is this, like, this weird, like, operatic kind of fatalistic streak in it that pops up in scenes like that I think goes against the stronger elements, like its naturalism and the way it tries to, like, adhere to, like, a very, I don't know, as realistic as it possibly can get. Then all of a sudden there are these, like, moments where somehow that guy tracks her down and is like, ah, she was so close to being saved again, and the professor had a change of heart and things like that. But then also it is funny how they lampoon these academics who, you know, are so fascinated by her and so interested and want to take her in and study her, and then it's like, oh no, but now she smells really bad.
And I mean, like, they are probably the biggest heels in the movie, because they're not only her, are like, they don't only want to, like, commodify her and use her as this little bauble or whatever in their, you know, collection of things, but they're also, like, trying to kick an old woman out of her home.
Yes, like, that's right.
Explicitly get away with it at the end of the movie, and I was just like, wow, these people suck. Like, they just suck. They're terrible. Yeah.
I think his wife is a really well-realized character in a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. That, like, it becomes, like, when he first meets the vagabond, the titular vagabond.
Sure.
Mona.
Mona.
Without
and
a roof.
He's describing her to his either wife or fiance or long-term girlfriend. I don't remember if it was explicit what their relationship was, but his significant other of some fashion. Mm-hmm. And she, like, starts to get, like, a little jealous. He defends it as being like, oh, you're so clean, you're like a princess, and she's like a toad. And he's like, you don't have to worry about her. Like, it's like, it just reminded me of how much I love you when I saw her. And I was like,
that's a cool move.
There's a little bit, the woman is, like, a step ahead of him there, where she's like, well, I can't keep her around there, because if she gets clean and starts working, then he might leave me for her. I gotta keep her dirty. Literally and metaphorically. And I thought that was, like, you know, a lot of internalized misogyny represented very well, and just mm-hmm. like how much she had and like completely digested these ideas of like class and patriarchy and structure so much so that she was going to just, you know, live, just do these horrible things, like to her, was, I guess that's her aunt, maybe, or her
it's his, it's aunt. Yeah, it's his aunt. Yeah.
Just like destroy her life.
She's like, no, kick her out of the house so we can live in it.
Yeah. So that they can fit into this society how they want it. And it's like, yeah. It's also a nice reminder that knowing the things that are bad doesn't make you a good person. Like, and being an academic and being aware of all these class structures doesn't make him not
not want to take advantage of them. Take over the house. Yeah. In general, that pops up with many of the female characters as well, and that his mentor professor does the same thing initially and then has a change of heart when it's way too late, and you know, his wife probably knows better as well, but like doesn't want to deal with that shit and knows that he's up to no good, knows that he's got some slimy ulterior motives. And then the only person who really does connect with the titular vagabond is his old aunt, who's, you know, nearing death and recognizes how she's been cast aside and, you know, probably feels very similar emotions to Sandrine, albeit coming from a different side of the spectrum. Everybody's technically aware, but and the maid as well, the housekeeper, she technically knows what's up, but then also has this like weirdo, like romanticized idea of what it's like to be without a home. And you know, then at the drop of a hat, as soon as somebody yells at her about it, she's like, yeah, you gotta get out of here, here's $100. And then just like throws her out.
Yeah.
Because she wants to live out some like weird vicarious fantasy about being like homeless and in love or something, some like lovers on the bridge shit.
Yeah, yeah. She's very into the guy who's the sort of bad boy who's like, I don't follow any rules. I'm robbing old people. You know, like.
He's an early Redditor before the internet. Yeah. Talking about how, you know, he's really being held back by all the people around him when he literally won't get out of bed.
Yeah.
I'd get out of bed if it was worth it, but I already know that it isn't.
Yeah. Society's going to make me pay taxes. Taxation is theft. It's like one of those guys, like a narco capitalist. The part with the professor too is funny because it's literally like after she has a near death experience where she was like, oh, I saw so many images of that homeless woman, like I should help her. Like after I got electrocuted.
It's a funny near death sequence too.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on at first. I was like, what is she doing? And I was like, oh, I see, she's being electrocuted. Okay. It's a very strange scene. She's just like grabbing those lights and going. I was like, it's a strange thing to do.
I like it. I like the Looney Tunes aspect of
he that just, moment. Yeah, it's funny because he just flicks the light switch off. She's like, oh my God, I almost died.
And he's like, oh, you couldn't have almost died. I came immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like, it was a few seconds. She was like, it felt like forever.
He's a pretty perfect heel in this movie.
Yeah.
It's a sobering mirror to look into, as per usual.
Tree actor.
Yeah, the thing about the trees, too, is kind of funny. That weird story about how it was the crates, the like weapons crates left over from the American military that gave the trees a fungus.
Uh-huh. It rotted them from the inside out.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. A metaphor on a metaphor. Do you like a little metaphor on your metaphor? You're serving them up hot and fresh.
I prefer my metaphors plain.
Yep. Plain, so like the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little
nothing sprinkled on top.
No seasoning needed.
Here's a plain tree metaphor. That's a really good line. Plane plane. In case people were not aware.
Is when she's getting a ride towards the beginning of the movie from like a long haul trucker, and he's like, "You really want to stop here? Like, no one's here right now. It's 90,000 people in the summer, 3,000 people in the winter." And she says, "That's 87,000 empty beds." And she's talking about it from like a, you know, like I got a good chance of finding a nice place to sleep, perspective, but like unintentionally talking about it from like a ridiculous waste of capitalism perspective, like. Yeah. Is the summer really 100,000% preferable to the winter in this town? Like, is it worth having all this unused housing for 4 months out of the year? Like, it's
people want their wine.
It's not good.
Yeah,
it's not a good system.
No, pure frivolity. Then she gets doused in the wine at the end. More spicy metaphors. These weird people who look like they're from the village, like throwing wine at her. It's a very shocking, strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, very Wicker Man.
That's very interesting, too. Like, the use of wine in this movie is, like, it goes to almost like self parody proportions, where it's like the guy giving blood at the blood bank is like, pour me a glass of wine. It's
like, what is this, coffee? I want wine.
Pour me some wine, I'll get some alcohol in that blood that I'm giving you. Like, it's just, I was like, well,
no, nothing. That's after he's already given the blood.
Yeah, I guess so. But like, nothing more French has ever happened. It's like, oh, I'm giving blood? Give me some wine.
Now that my blood's really thin, I get drunk really fast.
That's smart.
Yeah, I really like the wine dousing scene at the end, because the beginning you don't exactly know what's going on, where they're washing the stuff off of the buildings and like you're like, what, this looks like blood almost, it's not, and they're like, oh, she was doused in wine somehow, and you're like, how did that happen? And then when you see the scene,
sounds like they drowned her in wine or something, but it's
much
dumber.
It's a very funny kind of take on the like Night of the Living Dead sort of thing, like
extremely upsetting.
Yeah,
because it's like it really, really echoes like a zombie movie or something. Because there's these guys in these weird costumes are just like splattering everybody with wine, and they're like like running after people like they're monsters. And then other people are like kind of into the frivolity of it. They're like, oh, they've got me, oh no, and she's like screaming and terrified, and like, actually
people probably know what's going on.
Yeah, and she like doesn't know what's happening, and they're like, ah, it's a game. And she's like, no, it's not a game, it's terrifying. And it's like, you know, another metaphor served up hot and fresh there on top of the metaphor that we've already got going. It's like, oh no, this is not a game. Like, this is life or death to me, and because I'm cold.
Well, generally about like men not recognizing like the situation that women are in. They're like, this is funny, and it's like, you don't get to determine that.
Yeah,
not when you
don't understand
her.
That I feel threatened. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it also goes even larger, which is the whole alcohol consumption in general, where it's, you know, in large part something that contributes to her degrading quality of life, while, you know, got all these rich people out there with their summer houses in wine country fucking swinging it at each other and running around. And there's this person who's just like, at that point in the movie, has started like kind of purposefully drinking themselves to death. And it is horrifying, but they're having a good time. They're taking a bath in that wine.
Yeah.
They just set up a bathtub in the middle of the Times Square and just like splashing around together in their tree suits, no less.
Yeah, she kind of provides like a little bit of a hard literalism to the world in a way that other people who have more aren't looking at. I think there's another great line where someone comes up to her in her tent and they're like, what are you doing sleeping here? And she's like, what do you mean? And he's like, it's a graveyard. And she goes, oh, you got any work?
Yeah.
Got any work cleaning graves?
Yeah.
Like, not worried at all about the, like, you know, metaphysical or supernatural implications of sleeping in the graveyard. Is just a place for her to sleep.
She doesn't have, she can't afford superstitions, basically.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's she kind of wades through this world, and it's like, you guys don't really look at the world as is.
Yeah.
You got some big class goggles on.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I think that is the part of the movie I find most interesting. The way that, you know, it is, it's almost an Occam's razor situation where, you know, there is some mystery to her. There's some suggestion she had, like, a, you know, a quote-unquote normal life prior. Like, she had, like, a day job and probably a home. And they, like, hint and dance around that. But by and large, she does feel like a, it's a kind of an Occam's razor thing where most of her problems are, like, oh, yes, they're all, you know, micro versions of macro issues in society. Like, from our perspective as viewers seeing this whole story, it's very easy to be like, oh yes, this is why this went wrong for her here, here, and there. But none of the characters can see that, and she ends up becoming kind of an object to project onto based on their life experience or their or occupation even, which is, you know, how we handle homeless people in real life ourselves. But then when you have the narrative spread out,
I'm not like, homeless.
Yeah.
Why should I give this person money?
Yeah.
Exactly. Who knows what they'll use it for?
Yeah, that's, yeah, always the thing. It's like, let me police their behavior while I'm at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the
because I know what's best for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another great scene that really underlines that towards the end of the movie where the maid is in, like, a train station, and she thinks that she sees her, but it's someone else. Although she is actually at that train station, but in another place. But someone who looks like Mona is, like, talking to this older man, and she's, like, explaining how her life has gone so badly because she was an orphan. And he's like, I was an orphan too, and look, I'm rich.
It's, yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's like, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Like,
nope. He's like we're, yeah, he says, we're brother and sister, you and I, or something like that.
I'm like, yeah, if you're brother and sister, you should help her.
Yeah. Yeah.
You weirdo.
Like, put her on,
scolding her.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't get to include yourself in her experience. You can't put yourself in her shoes.
She also loves music. She's big into music.
I love the music in this movie. Well, actually, I love the diegetic music. I don't love the score, which is probably the thing that keeps me from loving the movie, even though I think the score is used as a joke.
Yeah, it could be.
I appreciate the joke.
It is otherwise boring, though, especially if it is not a joke. But yes, the pop tunes in it are quite excellent. You know, the guy getting his blood drawn wants some pop music, too. Everybody just wants some nice pop music. It's nice.
Yeah.
Nobody else wants it. The blood people don't want it.
I feel like
the academic doesn't like want it. It's too loud.
Yeah, I feel like the poorer a person is in this movie, the better their taste in music. So it's like the guy who's like, you know, living off of blood bank donations is like, yeah, let's get some music going in here. Let's get some pop music.
Yeah.
And she's like, yes, I have the best taste in music.
I'm surprised she didn't steal my radio. She was always eyeing it. She has an affair with for a while. We're living in that castle together.
To keep track of a castle. And she's just striving for this purity of life, but you can't have it. People won't let you have it.
Yeah. Mm,
sad.
Well, she did smoke 4 months of weed in 2 days.
Oh, I know. That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
That's a slippery slope, I suppose.
Smoke if you got them, I guess.
Yeah, I think, again, sort of what I like about that scene, I mean, it's, you know, it's driving the same paint home over and over again, but it does a good enough job with it that it still remains mostly watchable about, like, how filtered your ability to see what other people's lives are through your perspective. So he's like, I got hit on the head and she abandoned me. Like, how rude. That's like, I needed her. And the other, like, it's like, but if you looked at it from her perspective for a second, it's like, she saw someone get attacked and she ran because she was scared. Like,
she was like, oh no, they attacked him. They might be coming to attack me next.
But it was like, I could have used her help. And it's like, I mean, I guess, but also, like, what would you have done if the situation had been reversed?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's selfish in this movie. even she kind of is, but, you know, we can understand why. She has some actual reasoning for it. Everybody else, though, very selfish people. Across the board.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that's kind of like what you sort of started saying with the podcast, is that mm-hmm. it would be easy to make her, like, you know,
yeah.
an O'Hal Hazard Balthazar type figure, yeah, where sure. she just accepts the suffering yeah. of others and, like, angelically goes through it. And it's like, she's not, you know, she's not different from them. That's not, like, why she deserves to have a better life. It's because mm-hmm. she is a good person. She deserves to have a modicum, a standard of living, because she's a human being.
Exactly.
That's why.
Very wise old Varda.
Yeah.
On to something.
She's a smart lady. I like that Faces Places quite a bit.
Sure enough. So, I feel like the other one from this era I saw, similar reaction. I don't know. This mid-period Varda, not hitting for me. I like new Varda. I like these experimental docs. Those are fun. It's how one sings, the other doesn't. 2.5. It's, you can...
Coward's Grade.
Have you seen that one?
No. Okay. All I've seen, and yeah, I guess I'm all over the board. I've seen La Pointe Court, which is like her first film.
Yeah.
This one, obviously, Faces Places, and The Gleaners and I, which I saw a long time ago,
yeah.
and had a very, like, this is too weird for me reaction, so I'd be kind of interested in rewatching it at some point.
Yeah.
We saw it 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was when we were doing a female filmmakers marathon.
Yeah.
Wow. Whole decade. Yes, time to return. That one's very good.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy how long it's been since we did that. I don't know, it that whole, like, series, I guess, of marathons started when I was like, I want to do a Michael Bay marathon. Like, that's what it started with. And I was like, we're going to watch a bunch of Michael Bay movies over the course of a few days. And we did that one. And then Ruben was like, all right, for the next one, let's do female filmmakers. So we did that.
Go the opposite direction.
Yeah.
I don't think it ended up being all female filmmakers, though, because we watched Stage Door for that one as well.
Yeah.
Male director, but an all, you know, female.
Maybe it was, like written by a woman or something like that. There was some, like, stipulation based.
Perspective.
Yeah. But I remember.
We watched Marie Antoinette and Jean Dielman, another movie probably worth rewatching at some point.
Yeah.
Since I hated it.
We watched Lanchu. that was when we watched Fat Girl too. That was when I saw Fat Girl and changed my life a little bit. Really did change.
It was a rough couple days.
I was like, wow.
I think that changes everyone's life who watches that one.
Yeah. we also did a Fukasaku marathon.
That's correct.
And I did a 1980s sci-fi marathon. I don't think you were as involved with that one.
We did Australian.
Oh yeah, we did. Ozploitation.
I didn't like any of them except for Razorback, which was very fun.
Yeah, we watched Razorback. I forgot about that. Man, good old Razorback. We also watched Wake and Fright too.
Yeah, I like Wake and Fright, but I know the Wake and Fright take on this podcast. I projected it this year. It was like, I could certainly see why it would be hated. There's some things about it.
It's one that I feel like maybe I should revisit at some point, because I feel like maybe it had something more to say that I
there's some very didn't high latch highs onto. And one or two low lows.
Yeah, I mean, the kangaroo murder is an ideal for sure.
I think that was the only scene I liked in the movie.
But yeah, there's something visceral about it. But I don't know. I like
real. That's why.
I remember really loving the smash cut of him, like, putting his money down on the coins and the coins going into the air, and as they come down, it just smash cuts to him naked on his bed. And you're like, well, so guess he lost.
Yep. Sure did. loser.
Since most of my notes are quotes, I just want to read another quote that I like. I guess a paraphrase. Again, with that, like, philosopher farmer, and he's like, wow, I can't believe you're out on the road in this weather. And she goes, I didn't choose the weather. And he goes, you chose the road, though. like, fair enough.
That farmer was pretty
cool. We live in a society.
Yeah.
That farmer.
I think we should improve society somewhat. And yet you participate in society. Very interesting.
He's out there killing a lamb.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It was a decent movie.
I think that's it for me.
It might be for me as well.
One shot that I'll mention that I really like that's very brief, where she is sitting and looking at like an old statue of a naked woman. And it's like a very odd, funny meta moment of like, because we're watching something that's technically art, and then she's looking at like an artistic representation of a woman, and she's like, here's some person's idea of a woman, and I'm also some person's idea of a woman, and like there's something very
I like that, yeah.
Not upsetting about it, but just like very silly.
Pointed.
Something that's like, yeah.
It's pointing out the absurd.
Yeah, something very absurd about that moment. She's just staring at a statue, and then we're staring at her.
Yeah.
A lot of looking. Love things that recognize the whole weirdness of looking.
Yeah.
Stop looking at stuff, people. Close your eyes.
2019.
Turn your gaze off.
Yeah. My gaze is out of here, 2019. No more gaze. Gets me nothing but trouble. I like how gross her teeth are. That's another good point. They never bother to make anyone's teeth gross in any movies. But if there was one where somebody's teeth should be probably a little yellow and gross, it's probably this one, and they did, and it was great. And I said, much respect. Good work.
Yep.
I can't remember the name right now, but it's something that I like. I'm looking it up. It's a Riley Co movie where someone's teeth are gross. That's one of the things that I really liked about it.
Good old gross teeth.
Love Song.
Which one?
Love Song. Jenna Malone has gross teeth in Love Song. And then, like, the movie takes place over two time periods. And then it cuts to the, I guess, present. And she's living a much nicer life, but she still has gross teeth because you can't escape that. If you grow up with gross teeth, you're kind of stuck with it your whole life.
It's
one of the clear signs of wealth is having nice teeth.
Hide my teeth.
Yep, that's how you can tell that the actors are not really who they're portraying in the time period. It's because they still have perfect teeth, even though it's the Middle Ages.
I can't distinguish between reality and fiction anymore.
Or straight teeth.
Yep.
That was something they did in Django Unchained.
Oh yeah.
I forgot about a little detail that Leonardo DiCaprio's character has really bad teeth because he's eating candy all the time. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Form of cannibalism.
Yeah. How do you see? Yeah.
Calvin Candy.
Calvin
eating candy.
Good.
All right. I guess that's it for Vagabond, and also a trip down memory lane as to what movies we had festivals for, little personal festivals.
A little bonus feature.
We haven't technically chosen the next movie that we're going to discuss, but I remember that both me and Basil really wanted to do The Last Picture Show, so that's probably going to be next. At least I'm going to push for it. But if not, you'll know when the podcast comes out. You'll see the title of it, and you'll know what movie to legally download and watch in order to prepare yourself.
Buy on physical media.
Yeah. Go down to your local video store if you live in New York City or San Francisco, two places where video stores still exist.
Dust off that laser disc.
Nice Best Buy if you live anywhere else. You're gonna see it.
Fire up the reel to reel.
Ooh.
Yeah, Yeah, we're going to do a bunch of Bruce Conner movies, so everyone go buy your plane tickets to New York now so you can go to the Bruce Conner Museum and watch all of his films. Bruce Conner Archives.
Anthology, yeah. Film Archives. Rent yourself a booth. Take out those 16mm prints and get ready.
And while you're spending money doing that, why not spend money doing this?
Ooh.
Give us money on our Patreon, patreon.com/loosecannons. You can just give us money just because you love giving money to us, like the people in this movie love giving money to Mona. Or you can pay boxes for work if you want to be our boss. You can yell at us, scream at us what to do, and then we'll do it.
You can tell us we've been very bad.
You can find all the content that we've already made on loosecannons.net. Check out all of our old podcasts. And you can subscribe to catch all of our future stuff using your podcast listening application. If you give us a 5-star rating and review, you might help us find other listeners who would enjoy what we're doing here. That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Mitchell, always for joining us.
Love to be here. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Love to cast. Love to pod.
Director's like, we need you rolling right now.
It's like, he's like, I was already rolling
7 seconds ago.
I've been rolling for 40 years.